grandfather lived through the Great Depression. We lived through the Great Recession, the worst economic downturn in our lifetime. Did that have an impact on the number of people on our streets? Second, the worst foreclosure mess in our country since the Great Depression, with families being thrown out of their homes and no place to go. Did that have an impact on homelessness nationally? Third, a chronic, across-the-board defunding of services for the mentally ill in our society, beginning with a legal strategy which said that people should have the freedom to what? To be under a bridge, suffering with mental illness and no services? That's the freedom we celebrate? That is a direct result of a generation of disinvestment in mental health services. And finally, how about something called persistent poverty? Poverty's been with us since the beginning, and it's gotten worse, and there's greater disparities in income. Is that something we created, or is that something that America has to grapple with? And finally, let's just take our veterans. We've made a special commitment locally to house our veterans. We did not send them to war. We did not fail to welcome them home, and we did not break faith on the commitment to provide the services they need. So when someone says to me, how come there are still homeless people, I would say to them, how come we have not found a way to grapple with all the issues I've just identified? And since when is the city of Portland driving national trends of that kind? And it's always worth saying, compared to what? Compared to what? I think it's a disgrace that 1,800 people slept outside last night and more that aren't counted. In Los Angeles last night, 50,000 people were unsheltered. 50,000. In New York City, which is under a court order, nearly 50,000 people received emergency shelter. And that's just the people providing emergency shelter through the city. How many others are doubled up somewhere else? So let me conclude in this regard. I understand why there are some who believe we should retreat from this effort. I know it's very easy to throw out loaded language like failure and fraud. It gets headlines, it makes us feel good, and frankly, it divides us at a time when we can't afford to be divided. This is the time we should double down and say we have a plan that works and we have a moral obligation to fund it. Enter stage left Dan Saltzman. Whatever you think of his process, and I suspect that if Dan Saltzman had spent 2 years processing this, Joe Walsh would still come before us today with a twinkle in his eye and make a complaint, as is his constitutional right, as is his right. Dan Saltzman said, as the new housing commissioner, I'm going to do something about it. And he's asking for more money than the council is comfortable awarding. That's called leadership. And not all the details have been worked out. That's also called leadership, because we're not going to sit around fiddling while Rome is burning. We're going to appropriate the money and spend
Excuse me. Doesn't matter. Could you please escort this guy out of
the... They'll never reach the homeless!
Mr. Walsh, you don't get to do this.
And you know it.
You don't get to do this. We don't interrupt you. You don't interrupt us. Mr. Walsh, you may leave. You need to leave the room.
For what reason?
Because you just interrupted the council proceeding. Then you need to be silent.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Fish, please resume.
So Dan Saltzman has come forward with a proposal, and that proposal is based on a concept that he had a hand shaping a number of years ago, which focused on removing bottlenecks in the system and making sure that scarce dollars are invested wisely. And it's based on a supplemental appropriation of additional dollars based on his view that there are categories of homeless people in our community have not received adequate resources, and so he's partnering with the county. This is not a day to declare, to use incendiary language, to talk about the hard work of a community addressing a national disgrace. Today is a day to celebrate leadership and the partners in our community who are making a difference. We can scapegoat the people on our streets, or we can invest in solutions. Today, let's invest in solutions, and I'm proud to support Dan's amendment. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, very well said, Commissioner Fish. It's hard for me to add to that. I just want to thank the council for their support for this $1.7 million and remind them that it comes on top of an existing effort. It comes on top of an existing effort to reprogram existing resources to serve homeless women now, which I previewed with you in September. At that time, I said I would be convening a stakeholder group to come back with a request for an additional $1.7 million, and that stakeholder group helped me to shape the bones of the request that is before you today, and that is to invest $1 million in helping vulnerable homeless adults, with a particular focus on those with mental health issues, and also focusing on hotspots as identified by businesses, by public safety organizations, and then $700,000 to house homeless families. Homeless families, on an average, 2 to 3 kids we're talking about per family. Many of those are victims of domestic violence. So these proposals are designed to get this money on the streets right away. We're investing in existing providers who are doing a good job. We're giving them more resources to do their job better. So that's what this is about. It's about responding now. And I recognize fully well, Commissioner Novick and others, this is a one-time request. It's in no way a positioning for an additional ongoing request. I'm not sure what the Housing Bureau will be requesting for next year's budget, but this is nothing more than a one-time request to deal with urgent needs now. I think that Commissioner Fish just articulated very well. And it's modeled after a proposal that he brought forward in 2010 that resulted very well in getting families and individuals into housing and to remain in housing at least a year later. So I appreciate the council's support. I also want to thank the Housing Bureau for their work, Amy True in my office for her work, and the stakeholder group for their time to help shape these proposals and their commitment. And the stakeholder group, by the way, as Commissioner Fish alluded to, many of them were present last night receiving Spirit of Portland awards. So it's good to see them here again this morning. So I just want to thank, and then Commissioner Wendt also for her leadership in leveraging $130,000 from the state to assist in this effort. And I'm sure she'll be working with her colleagues at the county to so we can leverage their resources as well to respond to the urgent need of homeless individuals and homeless families in particular. So thank you again, and I appreciate everything else that's in our bump, and pleased to vote aye.
Hales?
Well, I want to start by supporting the comments of every single one of my colleagues here this morning. Hearing this eloquence, this clear-headedness, and this vision from my colleagues shows why it's a privilege to be your mayor. This is a great team. And I want to specifically refer to some of them because the points were well made and they're not just words. Commissioner Novick, you're right. We need to be investing more one-time and ongoing revenue in emergency preparedness. We're not ready for a major earthquake or most other significant calamities that could befall us as a city, and you've been highlighting this issue, and you're right. And we need to find the resources to put the Sears Building into proper condition to be that West Side Emergency Response Center, and I'm committed to doing that. So thank you for your patience with this foregone short-term opportunity to do something up there, because we need to get on with it, and soon. Commissioner Fritz, you're right. $1 million a year for park maintenance is ludicrously low. And one of the things that I'm committed to as your mayor is to work with Commissioner Fritz and the community to find additional ongoing resources for our park system, both to build the parks that are missing, the parks that are on paper but not yet in the neighborhoods, and to maintain this amazing park system that we have in the condition that it deserves. So that's a piece of good stewardship that's also deferred but not forgotten here. Commissioner Fish, thank you for your thoughtful reflections on the context in which we're making our decisions here and the responsibilities we have to try to do the best we can at the local level in light of some national and state shortcomings in dealing with these big trends and challenges to us as a society. And Commissioner Saltzman, thank you for your leadership in putting together this package. This is the right thing to do with this opportunity. We are investing in the future of the city as a municipal enterprise that provides services to all our citizens by paying off this debt and providing more ongoing resources, not enough, a thin layer of new resources for a big city with a lot of challenges. But we're doing the right thing in investing in our own future by making these commitments to paying down debt, and we're doing the right thing by spending a significant amount of additional money on a critical need in our community for vulnerable people that need housing tonight. So, Dan, thank you for your leadership. Thank you all for your support for this package. We are putting the city of Portland on a sounder basis for a better future, and I'm very pleased at the good work that's been done at this council table and by our budget office and by our bureaus in putting us in this position here today. Thank you all. Aye. Okay, now let's move on to the other item. Commissioner Fish, I believe you have some comments and a panel to call forward.
Could we read 1059 one more time, Carla?
1059, amend the business license law to increase the owner's compensation deduction maximum for the 2014 tax year.
Okay. And let me clarify, by the way, just procedurally, that we did have a first reading on, we had a first reading on this item at a previous council meeting. It was continued to today, and this we're going to conduct a public hearing, and then we do have the opportunity to vote on this today. So just in case anyone's wondering.
Thank you, Mayor. We have a distinguished panel with us today. It's been very patient, and I'd like to invite them forward. Heather Hale from Venture Portland, Sandy McDonough from the Portland Business Alliance, and Steve Faree, the current chair of SBAC, and most importantly, the owner of Mr. Reuter.
And then just, again, I want to make sure that people understand the rules of the House here, and that is if someone is warned for interrupting testimony and interrupts testimony again, they'll be removed from the chambers. This is a deliberative body, not a sideshow, and everyone gets to have their say here, including members of the council. So, Mr. Walsh, you've been warned. Please don't interrupt the proceedings again. You have an opportunity, sir, to testify, to sign up to testify on any council item. You're free to do that, and you know that because you do it frequently. But you do not have the right to interrupt members of council or other citizens who are here to testify, and they don't have the right to interrupt you either. That's the rules. Good morning.
Mayor, let me just tee it up very quickly. In the May budget that we adopted, we included a budget note directing the Office of Management, the Budget Office, to identify funding that would allow us to increase the business owner's compensation deduction to $100,000. There's been a longstanding commitment of this council that predates me to set it at $125,000. We've been making incremental progress, probably too slow for some of our partners. But because of the opportunity here to have some ongoing money that we can invest, it is the council's desire today to actually proceed with this ordinance that directs the budget office to fund the increase in the business owner's compensation deduction. And in plain English, why does that matter? Because it will mean more dollars in the pockets of our small businesses. Our small businesses, as we said earlier, 94%, 50 or fewer employees. They're the engine of growth in our neighborhoods. They are dealing with a lot of regulatory uncertainty. With a little more money, they can expand their payroll, reinvest in their businesses. And here's the most important thing. When they are successful, we have the revenue to invest in our community, in roads, in streets, in the things our community wants. And so it's vitally important that we, in turn, make an investment. Today, we're honored to have three guests. Heather, are we starting with you or with Sandy? Sandra McDonald. Sandy?
Great. Thank you. Mayor Hales and City Council members, I'm Sandra McDonough, and I'm President and CEO of the Portland Business Alliance. We're the Portland Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here today to support the proposal to raise the owner's compensation deduction to $100,000 for the 2014 tax year. As you've discussed several times today, Portland is, in many respects, a small business town, with something like 1 in 10 of our people actually working in small firms. These employers represent a significant part of our economy, and unfortunately, they're often disproportionately impacted by taxes and fees. And we think that the business license tax is particularly burdensome in many respects for these small and family-owned businesses. It's unique to Portland and Multnomah County, and frequently it creates a disincentive for businesses actually to locate here. In 2007, Portland City Council took the first steps towards providing relief to small business owners from this tax by increasing the minimum that you have to pay on to $50,000 and raising the owner's compensation deduction to $80,000. And they also, at that point put an inflation adjuster on there. And at that time, as we've discussed, there also was a commitment to raise the minimum to $125,000 within 5 years. Sadly, the recession happened at that time, and a number of us, including City Council, had to change some of our priorities as we dealt with that, and so that was put on hold. But we made sure we took every opportunity to remind council members that there was this commitment. So for that reason, we're very happy to be here today, 6 years later, to support this very significant move forward to raise the deduction to $100,000. And I particularly want to thank Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fish for bringing this to you today. We support this ordinance because we believe it brings greater fairness for Portland's businesses through this tax business license tax reform. And we believe that it will help keep more businesses and employees in Portland. And as Commissioner Fish mentioned, when you put more money into the pockets of Portland businesses, they in turn can invest in their businesses and grow employment and grow revenues. And that yields more tax revenue for the city of Portland. Between 2003 and 2013, the city's city license tax revenues grew by $36 million, which equates to 7% a year. That's a huge increase in the revenues that the city sees. So we hope that by making it a little easier on these small businesses, you'll see more investment, and that will mean more growth in city revenue and investment in the services we all rely on. So thank you very much for taking this important action today, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Hales and the commissioners and Commissioner Fish for inviting me here today.
Yes, sir.
And I also want to thank you also for doing the Small Business Day proclamation also. My name is Steve Free. I'm the owner of Mr. Reuter Plumbing, and I'm also the chair of the Small Business Advisory Council for the city of Portland here. And I'm here today to really express my support for increasing the owner compensation deduction on the business license fee. You know, the Small Business Advisory Council for several years, I think Andy kind of alluded to it going back to 2007, we've really been pushing for the $125,000 mark. But by increasing it to at least $100,000 now, you really are helping lots of small businesses, and they can reinvest that money back into their business, which can create jobs, into payroll dollars, or into equipment, which can also add jobs also. So this, you know, really helps small business. Most people that I think that small businesses, when we do this kind of a deduction kind of thing, it goes into our pockets. But the reality is, as small business owners, we're constantly having to reinvest back into our business. So we need to put the money back into our businesses. The other thing is, you know, this fee does create an unfavorable playing field, because you've got Clackamas County that doesn't have these kind of fees, you know, Washington County, et cetera. So, you know, by raising the deduction amount, it puts our Portland businesses more on a level playing field. In the last 3 years, small business costs have risen. In the last 3 years, at the same time, the number of small businesses' sales revenues have gone down. So this is another reason that I think it's important to be able to really help those small businesses however we can during this rough time we've had the last 3 years. I, along with the Small Business Advisory Council, want to remind everyone that our ultimate goal is still $125,000, but we do support and look forward to urge you to pass this resolution to take it to $100,000. Thank you.
Thank you again, Commissioner Fish, for letting me come up here, and thank you, Council, for hearing this issue. As you remember, I'm Heather Hale, Executive Director of Venture Portland. We support the city's 50 neighborhood business districts, which contain 19,000 businesses. 98% of those businesses have five or fewer employees. We are really talking about micro businesses here. At Venture Portland, we know that the business of Portland is about more than just business. It's about people, neighborhoods, and culture. It's about passion and dedication and starting something because you believe your idea is the idea. It's about small business. and growing the economy to grow prosperity. After years of recession and a sluggish economy, January 1st will bring new financial challenges to Portland businesses. The reality of today's economy requires creativity and a commitment from all of us to work together. That's business owners, residents, and community and government partners. The owner's compensation deduction increase that we're talking about today is a critical component of that partnership. Thanks in particular to you, Commissioner Fish, for bringing this issue up this spring, and for all of you for putting through this deduction additional money back in the hands of the local economy. As we've said earlier this morning, and as has already been said on this panel, the more we can put money in the hands of small businesses, the more those dollars get invested back into our local economy. So I will close by saying again, thank you for your continued support of Portland small businesses and for increasing the owner's compensation deduction.
Thanks very much. Questions?
So, yeah, Sandy, the question just occurred to me. The Washington State B&O tax, does that have an owner's compensation deduction, do you know? And if so, how much is it?
I don't know exactly what it is, but I will get back to you on that. Most taxes allow you to deduct business expenses, and the owner's compensation is typically a business expense. But we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, I think Terry knows.
And Terry knows? What is it, Terry?
Terry Williams, Tax Division Manager and Deputy Director for the Revenue Bureau. The B&O tax is a gross receipts tax, and so that's a rate that's before any deductions for expenses.
Oh, so there is no deduction.
So in that case, on that particular tax, there is no deductions for expenses.
But the difference is this is an income tax, and so it's a different kind of an animal as opposed to a gross receipts tax.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next group, Carla.
We have two people signed up, Debbie Kitchen and Charles Johnson.
Come on up. Oh, we're okay. Previous agenda. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. Mayor Hales and members of the council, I'm Debbie Kitchen, co-owner of Interworks General Contractors for a small family-owned business in Portland, and I'm also the chair-elect of the Portland Business Alliance. On behalf of small and family-owned businesses across the city, I want to thank you for taking this action today, an update to the business license tax. This change is important to many small businesses because it does help turn money back into the economy, and it helps us keep and attract small businesses throughout the neighborhoods. We particularly appreciate your strategy of using this year's budget surplus to buy down some of the city's outstanding debt to provide ongoing savings. We think that's good stewardship of the city's finances. We've long advocated for increasing the owner's compensation deduction because without it, the business license tax acts as a personal income tax, which discourages many small and family-owned businesses from locating in the city. That is why we look forward to continuing to work with you to raise it ultimately to a deduction of $125,000. As you know, the business license tax revenue continues to grow rapidly. Adjusting the deduction to the higher level would not be a reduction in business license tax revenue, just slower growth in that revenue during this time. Thank you again for your continued efforts on behalf of small and family-owned businesses in our community, and we strongly support this change. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Commissioners. Charles Johnson, for the record. And I'm very glad that the last person to speak before me, the future president of the Portland Beer Alliance, talked about what we really should have heard more about, the actual numbers. When people come in and say, cut the taxes, give us bigger tax credits, what they're really saying is, City of Portland, we don't trust you bozos to spend the money for the public good. But fortunately, she's pointed out that this is, there will still be revenue enhancement because we need more trash cans. We need more clean and safe people. We need to maintain the quality of life in the City of Portland. And generally, that's done in America by paying people to do it. You can't pay people to do that necessary work of putting out the trash cans and emptying them if you're cutting back your revenue. But I'm very glad that the future president of the PBA pointed out that we are having some good times for some people, and you will be able to maintain and hopefully even enhance the level of services that maintain the quality of life downtown. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Anyone else?
That's all who signed up.
And I believe we're ready for a roll call on this since it's second reading after being continued. Okay. Go ahead.
Novick?
Commissioner Fish came to me a while back and made a very compelling case that this council has repeatedly promised to make progress on increasing the owner's compensation deduction. And I think that it is important for governments to meet their promises. I'd also note that the federal government, I think, since the Clinton administration, has had a limit on the CEO compensation deduction of $1 million, which is normally evaded by giving money in stock options rather than in cash. So we're still significantly below the federal limit. But I would also note that this is not an insignificant amount of money. I mean, a price tag of $865,000 per year, that's several times the annual budget of the Buckman Pool, which people recall was the subject of a pitched battle in the last budget. I think it's in the ballpark of the annual budget for the Mounted Patrol, which again was the subject of a pitched battle in the last budget. So, I mean, I do think that we have an obligation to fulfill our promises, and $100,000 is not an extravagant exemption. But I know that our friends in the business community understand that although it's a tiny fraction of our overall budget, $865,000 a year is meaningful. So again, we reference our previous comments as to how tight the budget remains, even in better times. And I do vote aye.
Fritz.
In November of 2007, I was collecting 1,000 donations of $5 in order to qualify for public campaign financing and to then win the election in 2008. And one of the litmus tests in the campaign was asking this very question: do you support the increasing of the owner's deduction to $125,000? And I said yes. And then after getting elected every year, we raised this issue as part of the budget discussions, and over the past 5 years we have concluded that we weren't able to do that because of the cutting of millions of dollars. It remains my goal to get to $125,000 before I leave office in the end of 2016, and so I am committed to that, and I think this approach is the right one for this time. I hope to work with the City Budget Office and my colleagues on the Council to look at perhaps some adjustments in the business tax code that could generate increased revenue to offset lost revenue, perhaps by making the tax more progressive, which I imagine my colleague to my right here would support. And I would also note that last week at the budget session, we had some very compelling testimony from Portland State University and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, looking at census data, from Oregon State's economists and from Davis Hibbert's, analyzing how well is Portland doing in relation to the rest of the state and how well is Portland doing in relation to the rest of the metro area. And the answer is pretty darn well. So I've posted the information that we got on that last week on my blog. It doesn't tell the story that the numbers there tell that, in fact, Portland's policies have been successful in helping us get through the recession. We are rebounding quicker than other jurisdictions in the metro area, and that Portlanders in general are positive and willing to pay for services. So taxes pay for services. I certainly appreciate the small business community. We heard this morning from a woman who started her business in 2008, possibly the worst time ever in my lifetime to start a business, and yet today she has 9 employees. So again, let's remind everybody to shop at neighborhood small businesses throughout the holiday season, and I continue to support our small businesses, which form the backbone of our community. Aye.
Fish?
Today we're fulfilling a promise we made to the small business community by increasing the business owner's compensation deduction, and our work is not finished. But by today's action, we will be further investing in the success of our small business community, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm also pleased to support this increase in the deduction, and we will get to $125,000. I think it's really, there's nothing more difficult than being a small business owner. I marvel at people's ability to do that and the jobs they create and the other goods and services they provide to our community. And while I often think, why would anybody want to be anywhere else but Portland, It is a sad reality, or real reality, that it is possible for businesses to locate just across the county line in Washington County or Clackamas County or Clark County and conduct businesses. I can never understand why anybody would want to do that, but it does happen. And we have to be worried about that edge effect in terms of keeping our city vital and vibrant. So this is a step in the right direction, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Hales.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for keeping our eyes on this commitment and making sure that we acted on it as soon as the means were available. I want to support the comments that have been made. We have a vortex going on here in Portland of positive factors that are making this a good place to locate a business. One is educational excellence, and our improving schools and local institutions of higher education are a factor there. Another is that we have this climate of localism, that there are so many amazing small businesses here that it makes it a great place to live and work. And the third is quality of place. And the quality of place is very heavily influenced by the funds we spend on public services, whether it's paving and maintaining streets, and we need to do more of that, building and maintaining parks, and we need to do more of that, and a host of other things that we do. So the striking the balance between raising the level of those public services and making ourselves competitive is what we're about here, and I think this strikes that balance very well. Aye. All right, let's move on.
Regular agenda item 1080, amend evidence property procedures for the return of undisputed claims of money, for money.
Come on up. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Dave Benson. I'm your manager of the Police Bureau's Property Evidence Division. Currently, Police Bureau members deliver cash to us as evidence of, in crimes, not too infrequently through additional investigation, charging decisions by the district attorney, or adjudication. We receive instructions to release those evidence monies to rightful owners. Currently, code limits us to releasing up to $100 in cash, and amounts over that we have to release in a check. As an example, 116 times this year we've requested checks. 42 of those times it fell between the $100 and $500 mark. That's important because many of our customers are indigent and don't have bank accounts. So they come to us, and if it's $238, we have to get them a check. And some of the time we actually have to have the check delivered to us so we can deliver it across the counter, and then they have to go out and figure out how to cash the check. It would be much more efficient on those 42 times just to give them the cash back across the counter as opposed to ordering the check. So this is just a very incremental increase from $100 to $500, and I think it's warranted, and it's an efficiency for the city because it costs us money to issue checks, obviously, and it's a better service to these folks who many times don't have bank accounts or even addresses.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Questions?
Why do we have any limit? Why don't we just give the bundle of money back?
Well, that's a good question. Currently, there are unrestricted limits on prisoners' property, found in safekeeping money. We get it in four categories, and there is no limit in code. This limit in code was established many years ago for reasons that I'm not sure of, and there was just a comfort level with getting it up to $500, and that seemed to be comfortable for everyone. But I will tell you that after 60 days, we only hold evidence monies for 60 days and then we deposit to the bank. So we wouldn't have the cash after that period anyhow. And we don't like keeping a lot of cash around. So this was just seemed like a number that made sense.
For those 60 days, we have the money in an envelope or something?
We have a vault.
A vault. So it's safe.
Hmm?
So it's safe.
Oh, it's very safe. Mm-hmm.
In a vault, a building full of people with guns.
Right. You know, I'm just wondering what And do you usually give it back within 60 days? Is that the usual time frame?
Well, if we're going to give it back, usually it's pretty quickly. It's the charging decisions by the district attorney typically are made within a week, and the case is disposed of, and we're instructed to give the money back, and we pretty quickly give it back.
I'm pretty much in favor of giving back the money no matter how much it is, and especially if it's within 60 days when you haven't taken it to the bank yet. Why would we not just... Here's your money. Thank you.
Commissioner, I have no objections to that.
Want to amend it on the spot?
It's not an emergency ordinance, so
it
we can make
it. It is an emergency ordinance.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Well, let's see.
A little reluctant to do so when it just popped into my head and I haven't given you time to look into it.
But. Do you want to continue it or bring it back sometime soon? I'm amenable.
We could take testimony and see if anybody has any reason why we would not do that, and that would give you a little
looking
time.
Looking at the code here.
We very carefully account for these monies, and we're very careful with them. I can't see a reason we wouldn't do it. Just as a suggestion, if you're uncomfortable with taking all restrictions off, you could move the bar to $1,000 or $1,500. If there be some level of comfort there, I don't know.
It just seems like it's extra work for you to then take larger amounts to the bank and then process it.
Well, understand
within
we
the
receive
60 days.
Very large sums of evidence money every year. Mm-hmm. Most of it we don't give it back because the cases are prosecuted and the money is forfeited or used to pay restitution or court costs or a variety of other things. So the majority of the money doesn't go back to the person it was taking from. It's distributed.
Right. But that's not what this ordinance addresses.
No, this ordinance it generally deals with, I take your money and a court decides that you can have your money back, or the district attorney or the officer says, no, this really is in evidence. Let's give it back. And that's a small chunk. Like I said, this year, 116 times. So not much.
What's your pleasure?
Mr. Mayor.
Interested to hear other people's
Mr. Mayor.
Thoughts.
Yes.
I would just note that even though the money is in a vault and even though it is surrounded by people with guns, the city does run the risk that if there is a catastrophic event, that the money that would be lost in any catastrophe, we would be responsible for replacing it. If it were in a checking account, then that money would still be the bank's responsibility. But if we're holding on to it as cash, then we do run a risk. So if I might just suggest that we hold this over for a week to consider the eventualities and think it through carefully.
Yes.
That's very wise advice, Mr. Walters. Thank you. Presumably, though, it doesn't go to, even if it's that risk carries over now because it's in a vault until the 60 days, right?
After 60 days, we pull the money, it's counted and deposited to the bank, and that will continue regardless.
Right.
Okay. So I don't know if there's anyone signed up to testify on this item. There was?
Yes, we have okay. Joe Walsh.
All right, let's take testimony and then we'll decide.
Thank you.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I thought the same thing, Commissioner Fritz. I didn't understand why you wouldn't just have no limit on it. I don't think we should worry about the vault being attacked by drones. I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think we should really concern ourselves about earthquakes, because if we have one that destroys the Portland building, we have a lot of other things that we should be concerned about. Or the Justice building, I'm not sure where the vault is. I don't have that kind of money. It seems to me that people that go through the system and are found either innocent, not guilty, or charges are dropped should not be further inconvenienced. So if they gave you $300, you ought to give them the $300 back. I mean, that seemed to be common sense to me. I know I have trouble with common sense. But I would just like to agree with raising it. If you find a level that you're comfortable with, that's fine with me. It's not a big issue. But I kind of like the idea of if you put money in property, you ought to get that property back. You know? So if you put in $500 in cash in 20s and 50s, that's what they ought to give you back, your money, your property. So I would just agree with raising it, and I don't see a problem with limiting it. And thinking it through, overthinking it, is silly to me. Thank you.
My name is Lightning. I do agree with Commissioner Fritz on this issue. There shouldn't be any limits, plain and simple. To transfer the money into some account 60 days later is probably just to create some type of interest on the money, which within 60 days, if they're found innocent, just to return their money, plain and simple, on what they had on them at the time. There shouldn't be any check or anything written at that time. One of the issues I do have real fast is that when items are taken, say, from the homeless out on the street and they don't get them returned, one of the issues I wanted to just bring up is that do they auction these items off? And if they do, can the money be set back to go to the Portland Housing Bureau for the homeless? Because what I want to have an understanding, if possessions are removed from the homeless and they go to a location and they end up either disposing and or auctioning these items off, I want to make sure that the money from those items are sent to basically the department that pertains to that, to the homeless and taking care of them. And that's what I want to have looked into, just to get a clear understanding of that and to make sure that is happening, because we do have a lot of people out on the sidewalks that are complaining they're losing their packs, losing various things. And I'd like to see that money return back to a department that also takes care of them in the future. Thank you.
Okay. So let's continue this, right? And consider some other options, giving you even more flexibility. So let's continue it for a week. Thank you, Dave. Okay, next item.
1081, revise ordinance for a contract with Cascadia Behavioral Health Care to correct contract amount and include sole source language.
This is a second reading, so
next one,
roll call.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And 1082.
Assess benefited properties for street, sidewalk, and stormwater improvements in the Northeast Alberta Street Phase 1 Local Improvement District.
Okay, Mr. Novick.
This was a project of the Cully neighborhood in which, as of June 2013, 9.5% of the streets were dirt and gravel. This is a diverse neighborhood, as you know, which has the third largest total of unpaved streets in the city after Bellhurst, Gilbert, and Brentwood, Darlington. The improvements through the project at issue here now provide a paved street connection along the entire length of Northeast Alberta between 76th and 82nd Avenue, includes a new pedestrian connection for most of the length, including a connection to Sacagawea Park, as well as the infill sidewalks recently built on the west side of Northeast 82nd. This project brought significant benefits to the community, helping to complete most of the missing link on a neighborhood greenway linking many miles of north and northeast Portland, and is a connection used by pedestrians who now have new sidewalks and also used by cyclists who now have a newly paved street. And I'll ask Andrew Abbey to elaborate on the details of this assessment.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Novick. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. We had three property owners who participated financially in this LID, and one of them is with us today, Stephen Yett, and he's in the audience. We also had two other property owners who are not with us today, but we built the project with 100% petition support for those who financially participated. I just wanted to briefly show you a few highlights of this project. This is the first street paving project that we have closed out in Cully in 15 years. The last one was in 1998, so it's been a bit of a long time coming. This slide here just shows you where the project is. It was approved by the previous city council. The project area is between Prescott and Killingsworth. Alberta Street basically functions as a neighborhood collector, and it's the only east-west street for a quarter mile in either direction. And if you look at that map there on the bottom, that is the neighborhood greenway network in northeast Portland, and you can see that pink circle there, that was kind of the long-time missing link, that we had neighborhood greenways to the west, we had neighborhood greenways to the south, but we never completed that connection until this LID was completed. So it's not only a benefit for the local residents, but it also greatly improves connectivity across the city. So 9.5% of the streets in the city of in the Cully neighborhood are unpaved. So the Cully neighborhood used to have the seventh largest proportion of unpaved streets in the neighborhood, and that's dropped to number 8 with the completion of this project. This is just a recap of what we built. It's important to note that we did take advantage of economies of scale to build quite a bit more than what we originally planned to build. So we built 11% more street length than what we planned. We almost doubled the number of curbs that we built, and we increased sidewalks by about a third. So despite all that, the project cost did come in about 14% less per centerline foot than what we budgeted, excluding the betterments requested by the property owners. We also planted about 24 street trees, and you may have seen an interesting article last month, that street trees on average add $7,130 worth of value to properties with street trees. So we really built a comprehensive solution for the neighborhood. As you can see from this slide that was taken about a year and a half ago, pretty significant stormwater drainage issues in this area. If you wanted to get to Sacagawea Park or to Sacagawea Head Start, again, this was the only east-west street between Prescott and Killingsworth. This was your only way to get there, and then this is what you would have found along the way. So this is as we were wrapping up paving in April, and so you can see the dramatic improvement there. So that's it in a nutshell. I did pass out some written testimony in favor from one of the three property owners who couldn't be here today. It's been a real pleasure to work with Mr. Yett on this project. Just to note, when the city builds one of these local improvement districts, we borrow the money from the LID fund, and then the purpose of the ordinance today is that it levies the assessments, and then the assessments then repay the LID fund. So we did not receive any objection to final assessment, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Questions?
I just have a comment. Yes. And well, two comments. One, I noticed in the handout that you just gave us, the email from one of the participants, that the assessment was less than you had originally estimated. So well done on your frugality. Secondly, thank you to Stephen Yett for his contributions to this LID and the donation of parkland for Sacagawea Park. I actually got to walk along this section when the Neighborhood Association, the Cully Association of Neighbors, got together and got the Trailblazers to dedicate to put money towards the dog park in the parks in the Sacagawea Park in partnership with Portland Parks and Rec. So it's really a private property owners and the city and public partners coming together to focus on this neighborhood, and just a splendid project. Thank you very much for all of your work on Andrew.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Other questions for Andrew? Andrew, thank you very much. Is there anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Okay. Thank you very much. And is this this passes to second reading. Well done. 1083.
Authorize sole source award of land application services contract to Madison Biosolids, Inc., estimated amount $675,000.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Mayor.
Yes.
The BES matter. So
I know. Go ahead.
So, colleagues, a few months ago I had the opportunity to tour the Columbia Wastewater Treatment Plant. And one of the great stories I heard about was how the city recycles the biosolids produced by the plant. Dan, I think you know more than anyone else how successful this has been. This sole source contract award continues the city's longstanding and award-winning biosolids land application program at Madison Farms. The program has provided the city with a stable, sustainable, cost-effective, and environmentally sound method to manage its biosolids for the last 23 years. Madison Farms has received regional and national recognition for biosolids management excellence. This is a shining example of successful public-private and urban-rural partnerships involving the City of Portland. The program has created living wage jobs in Eastern Oregon and provides the important social benefit of connecting the City of Portland to Eastern Oregon. It also has the benefit of taking things out of our normal stream of garbage and out of other more traditional ways of disposing this byproduct. So Steve Berndt is here today, the manager of our wastewater services. He's going to give us a very brief overview and take your questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you. I'm responsible for the operation and maintenance of wastewater and stormwater collection and treatment facilities for the city and the related programs as well. And this is one of the important and significant related programs that we manage in our programs. Biosolids is and other byproducts of the wastewater treatment program are more and more seen as a resource as opposed to a waste. And we try to reuse the resources as when it's practical to do so. And when we have biosolids and when it's treated in, and can be reused in a sustainable fashion, it allows us to do some good things for the environment and also provide a good opportunity for the ratepayers in a cost-effective manner. 90% of the biosolids in the Northwest are reused through land application, similar to programs like ours. We're fortunate and proud to have a program that, if not the best, is one of the best in the region. However, a complex program like this doesn't start and can't be sustained as long without vision and leadership and without key partners. And Madison Farms is the innovator and the key partner in this program since the very beginning. The program's been refined over the years. It continues to be efficient, a beneficial alternative to solids disposal, and a good value to the ratepayers. So keeping the program reliable and successful in a very tight regulatory environment is evidenced by some comments by both EPA and DEQ. EPA appraised our program as being outstanding monitoring and record-keeping efforts and very conscientious site management practices. And DEQ recently said the City of Portland Biosolids program is operated in compliance with state requirements and serves as an example for well-run programs to other biosolids programs within Oregon and even in the nation. So the contract before you this morning represents the hub of this program. It's the contract that designates the use of parcels on Madison Ranch for application of biosolids and also the professional services that they provide. They're the best at what they do in applying biosolids to the land, and this is their land, so they really are uniquely qualified to perform this work. And the program won't be able to continue in as effective and sustainable fashion without this key partnership that's been developed and refined over the 23 years, as the commissioner mentioned. And I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Questions for Steve?
I have a question. Yes. So that, what you just said, it explains why the sole source, because it's their land that they're putting the solids on. I'm just wondering about the process here as to why this is not coming from procurement services and why we didn't go out to see if anybody else wants to do this.
I don't know the answer to the first question. The reason why we aren't going out for a solicitation right now is 3 years ago we solicited bidders to another part of our program, and we didn't get any viable alternatives, or Madison Farms was clearly the choice for the land application programs for all the reasons mentioned. Recently, we worked with procurement services to see if there was interest. So we put out a notice that of a sole source contract award and didn't get any viable, or I think we had one inquiry about what was going on, but we didn't get any interest in being a bidder on this contract.
If you put out the notice for the sole source, that's more asking for objections. Is that the process? I mean, it wasn't like you put out.
Yeah, I think that's true, yes.
And how do we know that the $675,000 is the right price?
The program over time has not had any surprises. It's only evolved in terms of reasonable cost increases. There hasn't been any jumps of significance. So it's been only inflationary increases over that period of time.
It would have been helpful to have had more information in the ordinance and in the write-up, because it doesn't say any of that. So what was the previous amount for?
I don't know the specific previous amount, but we can provide any information you need.
This is probably one of the shiny examples of the city using a creative way to dispose of something which saves taxpayers money. If the commissioner would like a fuller briefing, because I don't think we were asked, if you would like a fuller briefing, we feel so proud about this, we would be happy to do so. We're happy to put it over a week as well.
It's not
a non-emergency, so I'm happy to get the answers.
We'd be happy to give you a briefing and answers to your questions. And I think because we've had this relationship for so long, and because it is a unique relationship, and they're willing to take this stuff, and it saves us money from having to put it in landfill and do it the traditional disposal way, I thought we were more inclined to come in today and tell you that this urban-rural partnership continues, but we'd be happy to give you a further briefing.
Yeah, I think it's obviously one that you, the Bureau and Commissioner Fish, you know a lot about, and I'm sure it's going to be fine. There just isn't enough information in the ordinance for the amount that I usually see. So my other question that I'll ask when we get the briefing is about minority women, emerging small business, or subcontractor participation. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any further questions? Anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Okay, so this will be coming back for second reading. In the meantime, obviously, we've got need to communicate with Commissioner Fritz's office.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, item 1072, we need to return to that, please.
Mm-hmm. Update Bureau of Environmental Services sewer and drainage rates and charges fee scheduled to establish application and appeal fees for evaluation of manufactured stormwater treatment technologies.
Thanks for your patience.
My pleasure. Hello. My name is Sean Darcy. I work for Contec Engineered Solutions. Contec is a local company. We employ 50 people in the Portland area. We focus on stormwater treatment, detention, drainage, as well as bridge products. We would like to invite you, if you're ever near the airport, to come by and see our engineering and research facility. First, we want to recognize the time and effort that city staff and council have dedicated towards the application process for manufactured stormwater treatment products. The general goal and the direction recommended by city staff regarding Appendix B in the Portland Stormwater Management Manual is fully supported by Contec. I began my career in stormwater about the same time Appendix B was first implemented. It was innovative. It was cutting edge at the time that it was published over a decade ago. It is time for a new process to be put in place for the next decade. Specifically addressing the agenda item, Contec fully supports the inclusion of Portland State to provide peer review. We use Portland State as a technical resource over the last decade. We have hired Portland State students, and we truly believe the city will benefit greatly from this collaboration. CONTEC fully supports the application fee, but we do have some reservations. To address our concerns, CONTEC would like to request an effective date change from January 1st to June 1st, 2014, to make sure that Appendix B can be sustainable